This is the Blaze Radio On Demand.
The experts at Web.com want to build your business a successful website for free, just like we did for these current Web.com customers.
We've used and looked at other website designers, but there's nobody better than Web.com.
Web.com can build your website in as little as 7 days free. Plus, we'll promote it on all the major search engines like Google, Yahoo, and Bing. If after 30 days you're happy, we'll continue to provide promotion, hosting, support, and maintenance, all for one low monthly fee. If not, cancel and pay nothing.
If you're in business today and you don't have a web presence, you won't be taken seriously.
Call right now and you'll also get a free .com or .net domain name for your new website powered by VeriSign, the world's leading domain name provider.
Call 800-490-1099 or go to web.com/radio. That's 800-490-1099.
No upfront charge for site build, after which ongoing fees apply. Rights to site are relinquished when canceled. Domain included during active service, after which fees apply.
The more the world changes, the more we find comfort in things that never change. Never change. This is Rabbi Daniel Lappin On Demand on the Blaze Radio Network.
Welcome, welcome. This is the Rabbi Daniel Lappin Show. And I welcome each and every one of you, all of you noble and upright citizens, you patriotic people with secret dreams of daring and hidden hopes of heroism. You're in the right place. I am your rabbi. And here together, we will reject the cringing capitulation and the craven cowardice of the political class, of the president, and of the current administration, looking forward to a brighter tomorrow. And one of the main differences is the attitude of the culture towards money. It makes an enormous difference. There is no question that during the 8 years of the Obama administration, and to tell you the truth, it was a little better during the George W. Bush years, but nothing substantive was done about repairing the culture's outlook towards money. Certainly during the 8 years of the Obama administration, the attitude towards money had become entirely toxic. Money was viewed as evidence of misdeed. Money was seen as something reprehensible. And money as a motivation merely pointed at the spiritual paraplegia of anybody as shallow and perhaps even as evil as to find him or herself motivated by that basest of all motivations, money. And so I thought that perhaps we should take a little bit of a closer look at the impact on a culture of how money is actually viewed. Now, I think it's fair to say that cultures tend to understand the subtle nuances of things that they consider important or that culture considers important. And so, not surprisingly, every culture has many words for water. You can have a water, you can have a river, you can have a lake. There is water in a glass, there is water falling as rain, but we have lots of different words, understandably, and so does almost every culture. But there are other words that are a little bit different. And one of the most interesting people to aggressively study this was a guy called Franz Boas, who began his work in the late 1800s and published in the early 1900s, and he was an anthropologist or a social anthropologist. They didn't have the words yet to describe back then what it was that he did. But he explored this entire area of how language relates to the culture using that language. And he was one of the early people who pointed out beautifully, he pointed out how it is that the let's call them the Eskimo languages, really do have many words for snow. Many, many words. As a matter of fact, it is, I think, I don't even have to say, it's absolutely reliable that by the way, I mean, you don't have to go back as far as the 1880s, but Igor Krupnik is a contemporary scholar of these areas. And I mention these details only because if you Google what I'm about to tell you, one of the entries that pops up quite often is the Eskimo snow hoax, where they, oh, it's not even true that Eskimo languages have multiple words for snow. Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, if you, what Igor Krupnik did, and many others have done the same thing, and there's some serious scholarship about this, folks, so just so you be aware, I'll explain in a moment why there is, oh, this is just a Eskimo language scam. I'll explain what that's all about in a moment, but it's, first of all, the facts are that when people say the sort of Eskimo languages, they're talking about a dozen different Inuit and Yupik dialects, and these languages, all of them, they have many, many, many more terms for snow than we do, which is logical, right? Because if I talk about snow, I mean, it's really something that you have to shovel to get your car out of your garage, or, I mean, you know, fine. How many different snows do I know, right? Well, packed snow, the snow that's falling, and that's about it. Those are the two different kinds of snow. I don't have any more words for them. It's just snow. Friends of mine who are ardent skiers talk about different, you know, there's powdered snow and there's light snow. There's all kinds of, fine, five, six different snows that they speak of. But not surprisingly, these guys who, people who live in the frozen north, people who build houses out of packed snow, not surprisingly, they've got about 53 different words for snow. They've got words for wet snow, matsaruti. They've got a word for crystalline powder snow that looks like salt. That's pukak. And so on. Many, many, many other words, obviously. About over 50 words for snow. It makes perfect sense, right? And that's because snow is important to them. And now just a quick aside on why it is that that there is this notion of, oh, it's just a scam, there's really no more. Okay, this is really recent stuff. And what it stems from is that modern academia, ranging from GICS, government indoctrination camps, otherwise sometimes known as public schools, all the way through university, have adopted the idea that all cultures are the same. You've heard the word multiculturalism. You've seen how it impacts damagingly and how it has imperiled the United States. The Los Angeles School District, when I last checked, was teaching and giving instruction in 96 different languages. Multiculturalism flows out of the academy. It flows out of the universities. And what they claim and what they say and what they insist on is that not only are all cultures equivalent, cultures are basically the same, and cultures have absolutely zero impact on anything that goes on in that culture. This is one of the reasons that this chattering class of American is excited as could be whenever an attack, a terrorist attack, is committed by a Muslim born within the country he attacks. Because that way, they are able to evade The idea that there actually is a cultural difference, the way people are raised and the way they are educated does have an impact on their behavior. And they say, no, look, you can see this is just, it's another American. And they avoid as much as possible. And you've seen both back in the Orlando terrorism attack and in many, many others, there are shameful and dishonest attempts on the part of the media to withhold the religion of the individual doing the attacking. And so not surprisingly, the idea now of linguistic relativism or cultural relativism, it's all part of the same idea where universities tend to block out information that contradicts the position they are committed to taking. The position they are committed to taking is essentially something that flows from socialism. You remember John Lennon's song, imagine that there are no nations, no countries, no borders. You'll remember the Communist Internationale. You'll remember the song of international socialism. The Internationale is what it's called. And so this idea is we're all exactly the same. And of course, the most disturbing idea of all is that the nicer parts of America are those parts of America that still live with the rules and rituals and restraints of serious Christianity. Not surprisingly, those are the nicest parts of the country in which to live. The idea that the culture that people are raised in is important, and it impacts their behavior, it impacts their lives, it impacts the lives of the people around them, this would appear to be self-evident. I'm sure that right now you're beginning to look at your watch, roll your eyeballs and say, when is he going to start telling us something we don't know? And you're right, of course you know this and you should know this. But it's still worth exploring only because we have to understand the strange disease that has taken hold in the hearts of people that says everything is the same. There are no cultural differences. You know, every year around about the time of Christmas and New Year, it's been happening for, I shouldn't say every year, but it happened in 2015, it happened in 2016, I think it happened earlier than that. There are orchestrated riots in shopping centers around the country. And they force the shopping centers to close. They terrify shoppers. Now, look, this is not good for the economy. Shopping centers are good things to have. You know, yes, I'm sure you buy on the internet. I do too. But come on, be honest. You know that it's not that long since you visited a shopping center. You know, maybe there was something you needed that day. Maybe you went there just because you enjoyed the atmosphere. Maybe you wanted to window shop. But look, it's nice to have pleasant, functioning, pretty shopping centers. It's just nice. I was taken around some shopping centers in near Cleveland, Ohio, just a couple of weeks ago by one of the developers who'd actually built and created some of these shopping centers. And I mean, first of all, it was just delightful to see the incredible pride the man took in his work, the pride he took in the quality of store that he invited into the shopping center, the pride he took in the restaurants and in the cleanliness. So, look, it's not good when shopping centers get jeopardized, and people don't need a lot of excuses to stay away from shopping centers. All we need now is, I don't want to go to a shopping center because I'm going to be caught up in a youth riot. Well, here's another way in which the newspapers and the media do you a massive disservice, And I have to say this very carefully so as that you understand that there is not an ounce. I mean, it's ridiculous that I have to even issue these caveats, that there's not an ounce of animus in me towards any individual or individuals defined by anything they can't change about themselves. But there is animus in me towards people who deliberately riot with the intention of being able to plunder stores and vandalize stores. And I've seen some of the social media messages that went out, both in 2015 and 2016, inviting young people to come and riot at various shopping centers, different cities around the country, different shopping centers. The whole thing is just one big game for the people involved. But let me ask you a question in a way that will allow me to highlight for you exactly what I'm talking about, because what I'm talking about is that it's not just a random group of people that is doing the plundering. It is people who have a specific culture that has been inflicted upon them in many ways by the government, and it is a culture that not only serves them poorly, but it serves the country very poorly. Who am I talking about in this guarded and careful and perhaps even timid way you might accuse me? I will tell you coming right back. But first of all, visit RabbiDanielLappin.com. Why? Because as a listener to this podcast, you can get a terrific price on my 2-book set. All right, I've got 2 really important books for people who are interested in changing their revenue pattern for the next year by earning more money. Right? Not talking about investment, because you've got to have some money to invest. I'm not talking about debt reduction. That's crucial and important, and you should do that. And Dave Ramsey is exactly the guy to help you. But I'm talking about increasing revenue. The 2 books are Thou Shalt Prosper, The 10 Commandments for Making Money, and Business Secrets from the Bible, Spiritual Strategies for Financial Abundance. Important books, effective books. I love the fan mail I've got. I've collected literally hundreds of letters from people who've told me how they've changed their lives through the application of these principles from ancient Jewish wisdom. You just go on to the website at RabbiDanielLappin.com, look for the 2-book set, and use it as a coupon code for your price reduction, which is significant. Use the word New Year, one word, N-E-W-Y-E-A-R, and you will be thrilled with how inexpensively you're able to acquire something of truly limitless value. What this can do to your earning literally knows no limit. So it's RabbiDanielLappin.com, and I'll be back with you in just a moment with further insights on, well, who am I talking about? Who am I dancing around? I'll tell you right now.
Ancient solutions to modern problems. This is Rabbi Daniel Lappin, on demand on the Blaze Radio Network.
If you're in the market for a new mattress, Casper.com/rabbi should be the next website you visit. Casper created an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. It's one perfect mattress, and it's sold directly to you, eliminating the need to endure one of those commission salesman mattress stores with inflated prices. Casper is shipped for free right to your door, astonishingly delivered in a sleek, how did it fit in their box? You just let it unfold, and there you have it, one of the most supportive sleep surfaces ever designed, hassle-free. Casper is made in America, and Time magazine named it one of the best inventions of 2015. Breathable latex and memory foams are combined for just the right sink and just the right bounce. Try Casper for 100 nights free, and if you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. Right now, get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/rabbi. That's casper.com, promo code rabbi. Terms and conditions apply. casper.com/rabbi.
Rabbi Daniel Lappin returns with more of how the world really works on the Blaze Radio Network On Demand.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. And thank you for being part of the Rabbi Daniel Lappin Show, where we have zero tolerance for crooks and creeps and clowns and cranks. But no, we are focusing on those who know what they want in life and are willing to serve their fellow human beings in order to obtain it. So ways in which false information is provided to you or distorted information is provided to you. And I want you to really understand this because so much of what I want you to grasp about money and finance has to, first of all, overcome a mental hurdle that the culture has erected in your heart and in your mind. You have been conditioned already to believe automatically that wealth is evidence of malpractice, that making money is unseemly, and that rich people, well, they're just bad. That's all there is to it. And I was talking about the fact that I went back and studied the printed news reports. By the way, video news reports, if you look at actually television news, nothing of what I'm saying specifically about the rioting is true because anyone with eyes in their head sees what the reality is. But it's fascinating to read just the printed reports. And I don't care what your particular background is, you cannot help. If you are a decent, upright person, if you're a person who wants to do well for yourself and for your family and for your society, for your country, you have to be worried about what I'm talking about. And I guess what I wanted to say is that these news reports talking about spontaneous rioting prearranged through social media where young people create frightening and destructive disturbances in upscale shopping malls around the country, terrifying people, making people go dash out. And, you know, people get traumatized. They don't want to come back to that store afterwards. They don't want to come back to that shopping center. And then we've, you know, people, stores have to lower their to try and protect their merchandise and their customers. It's terrifying. They lower their steel bars. In many cases, the shopping center had to close for the day. This stuff is not good for business, not good for anybody. Now, imagine, you all know what Hasidic Jews look like, right? Hasidic Jews, for the most part, dress in the pattern of medieval Polish noblemen. Long black coat. You understand there's nothing biblical about the way Hasidic Jews dress. It's a tribal matter. It's not a religious matter, but it has become a uniform. It's become an identifying characteristic. And you know, they usually wear big round black hats. They wear long black coats. And it doesn't matter if it's August in New York City. That is how they dress. And God bless them. You know why I say God bless them is because they're not hurting anybody. They aren't. They really aren't. They're living their lives, yes, in somewhat isolated communities. That's true. But I'm not sure that that is necessarily a dumb way to want to raise your children today. And I think wise parents will introduce some measure of isolation, raising their young children, even if it's nothing more than deciding you will not allow your children to be exposed to television, right? That's a wise step. Talking about little kids, that's a good thing, and that's, again, an isolating characteristic. But at any rate, imagine, if you would, that all of these shopping mall disturbances were being conducted by Hasidic Jews. Do you or do you not believe that every single news report would say a crowd of 70 Hasidic Jews started rampaging through the Beechwood shopping mall in Cleveland, Ohio, yesterday? Right? Does anybody have any doubt whatsoever that it would say that? Right? Or how about imagine that it was all girls? Imagine that somehow or another, it was all young women, teenage girls, who are rampaging through the malls. Do you doubt for even a moment that the news reports would say, in an astonishing and unexpected display, crowds of rampaging young women tore up shopping malls around the country? They'd say that, right? Don't you think? Or imagine a really bizarre coincidence that everybody who was rampaging in malls around the United States had red hair. Do you doubt for a moment? You see where I'm going here, right? Do you doubt for a moment that the newspapers would say, in a bizarre coincidence, Crowds of red-headed youth rampage through the shopping malls. At the moment, police have no idea as how, etc., etc. But, right? But these reports lacked that basic demographic data, which if you watched on news accounts on television, then you would have seen. It was perfectly obvious. Look, this is doing nobody any favors. You think about it for a moment. It's not doing favors for anybody. This is just not a good thing. There is a destructive culture, and there are reasons why it is concentrated where it is, but it has nothing to do with any human characteristic with which one is born. It does have to do with 50 years, 60 years of incredibly destructive government policies. As to why it has disproportionately impacted one group of people more than others is a different conversation. But it certainly is not exclusive, because in the United Kingdom, what we see is exactly the same destructive paradigm. We see exactly the same self-destructive and social destructive behavior. We see family life non-existent. We see sexualization rampant. We see gang activity rampant. And you know what? They are all lily-white, English-born young males, and in some cases women as well. So it has absolutely nothing to do with color. But it has to do with a bad and destructive culture. And as long as we try and pretend it's not there, and we ignore it, and we timidly cower under the fear of political incorrectness, there's very little hope of restoring this great country. And so cultures are very important, in spite of the fact that you are going to and are constantly bombarded with incessant propaganda designed to persuade you that culture is not important. Yes, it is. It really, really is. And it's so important that with my own personal work over the last 20 years, I've been able to demonstrate that the disproportionate financial success enjoyed by my co-religionists, the fact that Jews are less than 2% of America's population, but are usually 20 to 30% of the wealthy and financially successful people, right, that's inescapable. Inescapable. And anybody who thinks that it is connected to the fact that some people are born Jewish is a person who is suffering from the results of this kind of propaganda. You've been conditioned to believe that culture is insignificant. It's not insignificant at all. And the work that I've done over the last 20 years proving it is, that as soon as I was able to isolate some of the critical aspects of Jewish culture having to do with money and make them accessible to others, people of every background, every color, every race, every gender, everything, are able to experience exactly the same financial success, because you are able to absorb a culture. You can't change your color. You cannot change your gender. Oops. Oops. Did I really say that? Yes. I do say that. You know why? Because I laugh with contempt and ridicule at biology deniers. Yeah, that's right, biology deniers. And the fact is, people of every biology and everything have been able to absorb the Jewish culture having to do with money. But interestingly enough, by the way, German culture, right? There is something to German culture, right? Wouldn't you think? Interestingly enough, yes, what's interesting is that Germany, that's a culture. There is a German culture. And you won't be shocked to hear that the German language has many, many more words for war or warfare or war implements than any other language. You know, I shouldn't say than any other language, but than most other languages, including the Romance languages, and English and also Hebrew. What word does Hebrew have many words for? Well, one of them is money. Another one is friend. Isn't that interesting, right? Because money is made when two human beings interact economically with one another, each with the intent to serve the other, right? A free economic exchange makes money. That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely reliably. That's what it is. Now, German, that's a culture. All right. The border of the Roman Empire, you know, like nearly 2,000 years ago, was established at the Rhine. And one of the reasons that Augustus Caesar made the border of the Roman Empire there was because on the other side were all these incredibly warlike, very tough, very disciplined, frightening and formidable military tribes. All the various tribes that made up Germania. And what's really interesting that is that these German tribes that were sort of at the very threshold of being formed into the German people, they eventually, because Augustus Caesar decided not to wipe them out, but to sort of just let them stay there on the other side of the Rhine, they eventually came along and round about 500 or so AD, round about there, they came and basically wiped out the Roman Empire. And then from then to the present day, it's kind of interesting, but that border is sort of still visible. If you look at the map of Europe with not only a military or a political eye, but look at it with a cultural eye, you will see that that the border between Catholicism and Protestantism sort of pretty much runs along that line. The border between the Romance languages and the Germanic languages pretty much runs along that line. And by the way, you know, here's something really very interesting. The great Roman writer Tacitus wrote a book called Germania. Okay, and I mean, we talk about a 2,000-year-old book or something like that. And this book sort of speaks admiringly of these German people. And it's really, I mean, it's really worthwhile. Well, when I say worthwhile looking at, I'm saving you the trouble of having to do it yourself. What the book does is speaks admiringly. And he's a Roman, of course, and a smart one. He may have even have been aware that down the road, these people were destined to put an end to his empire. But Tacitus was this very great thinker and writer. He speaks of all these Germans on the other side of the Rhine, and he describes them in terms that sound almost like a reproach of his own people. Because indeed, he did see the Roman Empire becoming flabby and becoming subject to, yes, political correctness, and becoming subject to, yes, multiculturalism. And he saw the people of the Roman Empire becoming fat and without discipline. And he contrasted them very unfavorably with the tribes on the other side of the Rhine in this book called Germania. And it's all very fascinating. I mean, for anybody who doubts that there is something called a German culture, you need to know. I mean, this is something that's always fascinated me, and I really went into this. So there he is. I mean, he's writing about this in around about 100 100 years after the birth of Jesus, and then about 400 years after that, these people he's lording actually become powerful enough to pretty much wipe out the Roman Empire. Of course, 1,000 years after that, they came very close to wiping out civilization. This is a serious group of people, the Germans. And we'll talk about Angela Merkel some other time. But here's the most interesting part of it all. So this book, right, Germania, written by the great Roman writer Tacitus, was hard to get hold of. And turns out that there was a very important ancient copy of it that was owned by an Italian collector living in a villa in Italy. Comes 1943, the middle of the war. Now, you all remember Raiders of the Lost Ark, right? You remember how they sent people to find the Ark? There's a lot more truth to that story than you would believe. And I'm going to tell you more about it, not in today's show, but from today's show, I will tell you part of what inspired, not all, but part of what inspired Raiders of the Lost Ark is this very well-known story that in 1943, Heinrich Himmler sent soldiers to the villa in Italy in order to get hold of this oldest copy that was known of the book Germania, because the Nazis were making a fetish out of Germania. They were using it to create this entire mythology of the unbeatable Nazi Superman, and it's really, really quite fascinating. As a matter of fact, they even had an office, they had an institution under the Nazis called the Ahnenerbe, which sort of means inheritance from our ancestors. And it was that institute, that office, the Nazi office of the Ahnenerbe, the inheritance from the ancestors, that set about trying to obtain the copy of Germania from the Italian collector. And what this group, the Ahnenerbe, did was they were responsible for creating and maintaining this entire image of the great destiny of the Nazi party and of the German people. And of course, they can go back very, very far. They can go back to Tacitus's book from about 100 AD called Germania. But you know what? Here's something that only your rabbi could tell you. And that is, the truth is that Germanian culture actually goes back a whole lot earlier. Genesis chapter 10. These are the descendants of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Sons were born to them after the flood. The sons of Japheth were Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, Tubal, Meshech, and Tiras. Listen to the first one, Gomer. Okay, in Hebrew, you've got the root letters of the word Germany there, GMR. Okay, again, the N at the end of a word is, it's sort of grammatical or etymological in origin. It doesn't mean anything. It's like we have the bird, the raven, okay, with an N at the end of the word. In the German word for the raven sounds very much the same, no N. The Hebrew word for a raven, very much the same, but no N. And so the fact that, so don't worry about the N at the end of the word German. The key thing is the first son of Japheth in chapter 10, verse 2 of Genesis. And then if you're not persuaded by that and you think, oh, come on, Rabbi, you're pushing this, then just go a little bit further in the same verse. And then it says, next verse, verse 3, the sons of Gomer were, who's the first one? Ashkenaz. Have you ever heard of Ashkenazic Jews? Do you know where they come from? That's right, Germany. So this all goes back, and there's a whole lot of ancient Jewish wisdom on that that takes us off the topic now, because when we come back after this break, where we do need to go is straight to the idea of why it is that Hebrew has so many words for money, similar to why the Eskimos have so many words for snow. You want to live successfully in a snow environment, you need to be able to distinguish between all the subtle nuances of snow. You want to be able to live effectively in an economic environment that uses money? Well, then you need to be sensitive to all the subtle nuances in money. And I intend walking you through that as we move on with today's show. But for now, back to the website. You need a rabbi because, you know what, in an hour or an hour and a half show, there's a limit to how much I'm going to be able to give you. The rest of it is in my books. And I say this all the time. I get emails from people with many, many, many specific questions. And I say, look, I answer your question in the book. I wrote those books because economically, my life wouldn't work if all I was doing was responding to emails with people's economic questions or financial questions. It's in the book. The two books are Business Secrets from the Bible and Thou Shall Prosper. Those two books, they are available as a set, special discount for you, for podcast listeners. Enter the word New Year as your discount coupon code, New Year, N-E-W-Y-E-A-R, and you will get a whole bunch of money off the price of that set, which makes it a no-brainer, frankly. I'm your rabbi, Rabbi Daniel Lapp, and quick break, back with you in just a moment as we go deeper into money. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Rabbi Daniel Lapin on demand on the Blaze Radio Network. Find more at theblaze.com/radio.
If you're in the market for a new mattress, casper.com/rabbi should be the next website you visit. Casper created an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. It's one perfect mattress, and it's sold directly to you, eliminating the need to endure one of those commission salesman mattress stores with inflated prices. Casper is shipped for free right to your door, astonishingly delivered in a sleek, how did it fit in their box? You just let it unfold, and there you have it, one of the most supportive sleep surfaces ever designed. Hassle-free. Casper is made in America, and Time magazine named it one of the best inventions of 2015. Breathable latex and memory foams are combined for just the right sink and just the right bounce. Try Casper for 100 nights free, and if you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. Right now, get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/rabbi. That's casper.com, promo code rabbi. Terms and conditions apply. casper.com/rabbi.
With stories in the areas of family, friendship, faith, and finance, this is Rabbi Daniel Lapin. Only on the Blaze Radio Network on demand.
Welcome back. Your rabbi, that's me, Rabbi Daniel Lapin, reminding you as always that the more that things change, the more we need to depend upon those things that never change. And one of the things that never changes is money. That's right. It is a reality of life, just like gender is a reality of life. And just like maintaining body temperature in order to stay alive is a reality of life, food is a reality of life. And one can learn a lot. One can delve deep into a culture by exploring how that culture relates to food. For instance, right now, I think it's fair to say that there is an almost impossible to ignore faddish and weird obsession with food way beyond anything we saw, shall we say, 50 years ago. The interest in food, the variety of magazines on food, the number of entertainment channels on television devoted to food, the star status of cooks. It's a very interesting thing that's going on. But that would be for another show. Right now, of course, what we're exploring is money. And look, it's very tempting as we look around us, as we read or we listen to radio or podcasts or we watch television and we see what people say, whether it's politicians or pundits, there is an incredible hostility to money. There is also a departure from reality that suggests that there is sort of, on a national scale, a terrifying retreat from all reason. When people speak about a universal right to something, to anything, a universal right. I've heard people say to me on call-in radio shows, everyone, there's a universal right to a job. Oh, really? What does that mean? And I've explained in the past that any time you use the word right, as in I have a right, you must make absolutely sure that you know the exact address and phone number of the person who has the parallel obligation to provide you with that right. Because if you don't have the contact information for that person, your right is valueless. Now, one of the escape hatches that is used by those who use such phrases as a right to, by the way, universal right to an income. We're hearing that more and more today in Europe as well as in the United States. And there is talk about giving every citizen a certain amount of money. Well, okay, from where? And one of the escape hatches in all of this is that people are able to bypass that tremendously problematic question of, and who exactly is obliged to provide you with that right? Well, the sidestep is very simple to respond, oh, the government. And there again, there is a tendency of people to assume that the government has money or that the government can create money. Now, the only way that the government gets money, and you know that, I mean, I know who I'm talking to, the only way the government gets money is by taking it away from citizens who've created it. Well, you might say, yes, but the government can print money. And the answer is, yes, the government can print money, which is merely another way of taking it away from citizens. Because when money is printed, the natural and absolutely inevitable consequence is the lowering of the value of the money held by everybody. And when the government tends to take this very seductive but also very destructive path, the truth is that saving and investing is discouraged. Because if the government is creating money, the very best thing you can do is be in debt, which is obviously not a good thing. But if new money is being created, the best thing you can do is owe a lot of money, because you'll end up paying it back with devalued dollars. That's wonderful. It's like money for nothing. All bad news. It's true, but it's still bad news. And the temptation we all have, and it's one I want to warn you against, it's a temptation I have, it's a temptation you have, to dismiss those people who speak in terms of, well, the government ought to, or I have a right to a job, or I have a right to health care, or I have a right to anything. When you use those terms and you see people using those terms, the almost irresistible temptation is to assume that such people are cerebrally compromised cretins. Really, that's what you think. You think these are people who are cerebrally compromised, idiots. Because what sort of madman can think these things and believe these things? Wrong. Please do not dismiss those who believe in the worldview of, for lack of a better term right now, I'll call it socialism, but it's obviously far more profound and far deeper than merely socialism. But those who believe in that worldview, no, they're not cerebrally compromised cretins. They're not. They're not fools. They're not idiots. They have bought into a fundamental and distinctive error from which everything else flows. Right? And again, I don't want to get too far away from the topic of money. I want to keep to my script and to my plan for this show. But there is something here to understand, which is that if one has two paths on entering a forest, and one path is going to take you on a comfortable, level hike past rivers and waterfalls and bring you out safely at the other end of the forest. And there's another path you could take, which is a path with steep descents and steep ascents. It's very long, it's rugged and dangerous. And at the end of it all, it comes to an end in the midst of the thick forest. When you set foot onto that path, there is nowhere else to go. You basically have to go back to the beginning and then go on the right path. But the notion that you can do anything once you're on that path, it's simply untrue. You cannot. And so it is here, my friends. Once you take that initial first step, which says that human beings are here on this planet because of a very lengthy, unaided process of random evolution, then you are on that dark path. And that dark path, and again, I mean, I know some people listening, you know, are going to be, you know, you'll roll your eyeballs a little bit. Don't. Just hold on a second. I have to tell you, I once spoke at Harvard Law School, and I was speaking about much the same thing, discussing the relationship between human morality, human visions of our origin, and economic reality. And I said what I'm saying at this point. And when I said that, I had the word false in. I said, once you've bought in to the false idea that human beings are on this planet because of a lengthy process of random, materialistic, unaided evolution, then, and I hadn't got further than that before, from somewhere in the room, there must have been, I don't know, 180 students in the room, somewhere from the room came this sound. And so I stopped, and I left the rostrum, and I walked around to the front, so there was nothing between me and the students. And I said, I'm not going to ask which of you did the hissing sound, because you are already defined as a coward, and so you will not confess in public. You are a coward because it is the only sound you can make without identifying yourself. Every hiss sounds the same as everyone else. Unlike your voice, which is distinctive, you hiss in order to hide in the safety of anonymity. What's more, it's the sound of a snake. It is the sound of a frightened, timid, ill-founded individual, unwilling to defend his views, but merely wishing to tear down someone else's. And I think it's unbefitting a group of people whose parents or whose relatives or whose somebody is paying the sort of tuition that is being paid for you overprivileged people to be sitting in this room right now. It's unbecoming people who are at the pinnacle of American aspiration at this time of history to make a disgusting sound like that because you disagree with me. I've given you no reason to suppose that I am frightened to engage in debate with you. I'm not. I'm eager, and I welcome it at the appropriate and correct time when I reach the end of this section of the discussion. But I'm telling you now, I don't want anyone else to ever again, during the rest of my lecture, make that sound. And then I just stood there for about 5 long seconds. And then I went back to the rostrum, and I continued the speech. And do you know what? Nobody else did it. They never did it again, even though I said things they found far more disturbing than merely to call a process of random, unaided, materialistic evolution evil. But anyway, that is the point. Once you step onto that path, then the next inevitable step, it's as sure as taking the next footstep on my pathway through the forest, is to say that human beings are nothing but sophisticated animals. We're just animals on a different scale, on a different point on the spectrum. If your spectrum is speed, well, we're a whole lot slower than cheetahs, and we're a whole lot faster than tortoises, so we're somewhere in between. If your scale is brain size, then we're also on the spectrum. If it is heart rate, we're on the spectrum. If it's physical size, we're on the spectrum. So if you believe, and you have to, after you've taken that first step, that we're here for that reason, here's how we got to be on this little planet in a far-off solar system, in a remote corner of a galaxy, in a forgotten section of the universe, if that's what you believe, then you have to take the next step, which says that we are nothing but $9.5 of common chemicals, right? You throw in some carbon, some hydrogen, some nitrogen, a bunch of oxygen, and a few other things, and that's it. That's all we are. And once you take that step, then it is very easy to take the successive steps, which I have walked you through on a previous show, all the way through to the point that government is fantastic. Government is where we turn our anxious eyes for every form of hope and optimism and relief. And it goes from there that money is a bad thing. Yes, that's right. And that anyone who has it must have taken it from somebody else. Again, for those of you who are curious as to that last little step, I'll just give it to you in 60 seconds. And that is that one of the steps you're taking on this path through the forest, from which there is no escape unless you back up all the way to the beginning and answer the original question of how we arrived on this planet a little differently. And when you do that, then you say, okay, fine, we're here on the planet because a God created us in his image, etc., etc. But the fundamental thing is whether there is a spiritual reality or not. And if you took the dark road through the forest, there is no such thing as a spiritual reality, only things that are physical. As one of the most notorious politicians in California's history of notorious politicians once said, he was Speaker of the House from 1980 to 95, 15-year term Speaker of the House. Willie Brown said famously or notoriously at the time, he said, if I can't wear it, eat it, make love to it, or drive it, I'm not interested in it. And you know, that's exactly what liberalism or progressivism absolutely has to arrive at. Anyone who is thoughtful and honest, who has stepped onto that first step and kept going, has to recognize, yes, there is no spiritual reality. Look, if there's no spiritual reality, then everything is physical. And here's one of the basic rules of a physical universe. I mean, this is straight out of an elementary textbook on physics. And that is that any physical object can only occupy one place on the space-time continuum, and that's all there is to it. Or in other words, without using long words like continuum, it just means that at any moment, an object can only be in one place at any one time. That's all. So therefore, if I take my iPhone and put it on the table, at this moment, my iPhone is on the table. If my iPhone is now moved to your lap, the iPhone is now no longer with me, it is with you. Okay, and that's just, it cannot be in both places at the same time. It's as simple as that. If, however, I possess a tune and I teach it to you, and now you've got the tune, it would be a mistake to assume that I no longer have the tune, because a tune is a spiritual reality, not a physical one. And therefore, a tune can be with me even though you have it as well. As a matter of fact, my life is better because I now live in a more musical world than I did before, because now not only do I have that tune, but so does somebody else. It's a good thing. And so obviously, if money is physical, which as you and I already know it is not, then if you have it, it is very clear you must have taken it away from me or somebody else. That's an inescapable rule of the physical universe. So therefore, people who say that the rich have their money because they took it from the poor, you mustn't dismiss them, as I said earlier, as cerebrally compromised cretins. No. All that happened was they took the first wrong step on the wrong path into the forest, and from there it follows as night follows day, that if people have a lot of money, it is evidence that they, in and of itself, the money is proof that they took it away from other people who, because of them, no longer have it. Not because they don't believe that because they're stupid. They believe that because it is an inevitable, logical consequence of taking that first wrong step. And again, look, this is why it is. I've spoken in the past, and I stress it repeatedly, that I don't believe that there is any hope whatsoever for the Republican Party hoping to evangelize non-aligned or non-affiliated, or for that matter, Democrats, to become Republicans. It isn't going to happen. You can't do that. You absolutely can't. And from the moment the poobahs of the Republican Party decided that religious Christian Americans were there to be used as Republican voters and then dismissed and disregarded between elections, that was the moment the Republican Party began to fade and to lose significance, to the point, a remarkable point in history, where in 2016, a man was elected to be president of the United States who is not a Republican. And everybody attacked him, and people who were in the Republican Party, oh, he's not really a Republican. Hello? Really? You just figured that out? Of course he isn't. And that's part of his appeal to a whole lot of people who voted for him. But you don't get it yet. Right? Because years ago, the Republican Party decided to try and separate conservative politics, and I'll put in parenthesis, whatever that means, from its religious roots. And as long as you don't get the idea that what I call ethical capitalism is rooted in Judeo-Christian faith, there is no hope, because socialism uses the language of spiritual revival. Socialism sounds good. Socialism, you know, you might wonder, why on earth does Jeff Bezos, who built Amazon, he never could have built up the Amazon juggernaut in the Soviet Union or in Cuba. He couldn't have done it. He did it in the land of the free and the home of the brave. He did it in a place that even with an epidemic of statism that has been sweeping the country for 50 years, he still did it in a place where there is more freedom than elsewhere. Wouldn't you have thought that if there's anybody who should be a conservative, anybody who should be a Republican, it should be the founder and major stockholder of Amazon, Jeff Bezos? No, not at all. Because since so-called conservatism was severed from its Judeo-Christian roots, socialism has captured the flag of virtue. And so it is that, and I assure you that what I'm about to tell you is absolutely true. This may shock many of you, but, and I hope it doesn't shock too many of you, because the more of us that understand reality and know how the world really works, the better off we all are. But I can assure you that Jeff Bezos is far, far from alone among those who believe that being good and decent means being a liberal, who can't conceive of how a virtuous person can be a Republican. They really, really, really do believe that. And therein lies some of the true analysis of what really happened to the United States of America back in November 2016. Our website is rabbidaniellappin.com. And as you know, especially for you, for listeners to the podcast, you can get a price reduction off a set of two books. The first book is Thou Shalt Prosper, The Ten Commandments for Making Money. The other one is Business Secrets from the Bible. And you end up getting them for about $13 each for a big, fat, thick, hardcover book filled with information whose value is? Well, it's what you make of it, because the raw material is there for you to adopt Jewish culture, not for the celebration of Hanukkah over Christmas, not for the eating of kosher food over pork and shellfish, which I am sure taste absolutely delicious. And adopting Jewish culture economically, financially. That's all. Because culture is all important. Whether you are a Nazi in 1943 trying to establish a culture for your people so that Nazism would be much more than just a military creed, but it would actually be a 2,000-year-old culture. Right? They understood the value of that. And one of the problems right now in America, of course, not hard to see, is that we are cultural orphans. Right? I'm a Jewish American. You might be a Christian American. Right? Somebody else might be something else. But for the vast number of Americans who say, oh, I'm not religious, so what is your culture? You've already rejected. You see, because there really was something called the culture of America. Right? De Tocqueville wrote about it a long time ago. There is something called, and I think we all recognize it, by the way. We do recognize it. And those of us who get a lump in the throat when the Star Spangled Banner is sung and we all stand there with our hands over our hearts, that lump in your throat is proof that you know that there is something called a culture of America. However, for the last 50 years, there's been every attempt to extirpate it and thoroughly remove it from American life. And so for that vast number of Americans who have no biblical connection, so they don't have that cultural root, they've shed Americanism, so they don't have that cultural root, it's a very problematic thing to try and raise a family, to operate a marriage, to live your life as a cultural orphan. And if you are someone in that category or know someone in the category, you're feeling pain. There's no question about it. And maybe you're somebody who's feeling pain and you had absolutely no idea why you're feeling pain. The answer is you're feeling pain because of having no cultural attachment. Somebody who feels culturally alienated feels pain. It's a very important thing to be aware of, and for you to be aware of, you may be able to help somebody. People are hurting, and very often you can't put your finger on it. You know, on the surface, they seem to have a together life. Why are they in such pain? Well, one of the first guesses might well be cultural alienation. They're not connected to any culture. Big problem. The Nazis knew it, and we know it. The good folks know it. And the bad folks knew it. You can't function in life as a cultural orphan. So head over to rabbidaniellappin.com. Use the promo code New Year, right? New Year, one word, N-E-W-Y-E-A-R, and get a price reduction off the set of the two books that have all the information in them that can literally turn the coming 12 months into a 12 months with an utterly different financial outcome of anything you anticipated and anything you've had. But it does mean you have to absorb a new culture. I'm not saying it's simple, but I'm saying it can be done. All right, your rabbi, that's me, reminding you of how the world really works. Back with you in a minute.
More to come from Rabbi Daniel Lappin, revealing how the world really works. On demand on the Blaze Radio Network.
The progressive movement is full of lies. Why do Americans keep falling for the deception? In his new book, Liars, Glenn Beck reveals the simple answer, fear.
At our most basic level, we're all afraid of something, and progressives exploit this by offering us solutions to our fears. Solutions based on lies and an unrelenting hunger for power and control. Understanding the roots of these lies is key to helping us stop the disease of progressivism.
Liars by Glenn Beck. On sale now at glennbeck.com/liars.
Rabbi Daniel Lapin returns with more of how the world really works on the Blaze Radio Network On Demand.
I'm Rabbi Daniel Lapin. Thanks for being part of the show. Appreciate it. Thank you all, those of you who do me the enormous favor, which I greatly appreciate, of sharing the show with others, encouraging other people to download the show, listen to the show. Appreciate that, because I get stimulated by you being there. Look, I've told you before, I love speaking to live audiences. I speak to about 30 churches a year. I speak at about between six and ten synagogues every year. I love live audiences because I love the interaction with other human beings. Recording a show like this with no telephone interaction, like conventional terrestrial talk radio, without an audience, just speaking into a microphone, I've told you before, I'm candid about it. It is hard work, no question about it. And it's only the fact that your letters and your communications persuade me that you are there. That's the only thing that makes this work, honestly. And so I'm able to visualize you being there. And the more of you that are there, the more stimulating it is for me. The show is growing, and you can probably tell from my voice that that makes a difference. I am excited by it. I am stimulated by it. And it does really help. So let's dive right back into Jewish culture, ancient Jewish wisdom, the culture as it pertains to money. And look, we say all the time, earning abundant money, enjoying financial abundance is an inevitable consequence of engaging in human economic interactions based on a deep and genuine desire to love, connect, and serve. You know, and you think about that for a little while, and you realize that that somebody who goes to, and I spoke to somebody just recently, you decide to go and do a bachelor's degree at a liberal arts college, and then after that you decide to go for a master's in philosophy, and then you're going to get a doctorate in philosophy. And this person was boasting to me, well, he wasn't boasting, but he was a father. He was saying that his son, I asked him how old the son is, how he's doing. Well, his son is in his early 30s. I said, is he married? Does he have a family? He rolled his eyes. He said, no, not yet. I said, what does he do? He said, well, he's got a degree. He's got a PhD in philosophy. I said sort of lightheartedly, and I shouldn't have said it because we're all sensitive about our children. And I apologized afterwards, but I said to him, so how does one make a living with a doctorate of philosophy? And he looked at me ruefully and paused for a moment. And he said, well, I suppose you try and get a job teaching. What, so is that other people can graduate with a doctorate in philosophy? Hello, does nobody know how the world really works? But I said, oh, okay. And then he again smiled sadly and he said, he's working at Starbucks. Get it? And you know what? He's earning an honest living there. That's good. It's a terrible shame about all those wasted years. But let me tell you, if you go to university to do a PhD in philosophy, you are not trying to engage in human economic interaction based on a deep and genuine desire to love, connect, and serve. You're not. You're engaging in something very selfish. You have this fetishistic, don't use that word, it doesn't exist. Bad attempt at a made-up word. This obsession with philosophy, fine, engage in it in your spare time. By all means, God bless you. But to insist on expecting to make a living that other people should pay you after you have engaged in your own private fetish, philosophical fetish, no, that doesn't work. That's not how the world really works, not even close to how the world really works. And so that's part of ancient Jewish wisdom. You've got to love other people, you've got to want to connect with them, and you've got to want to serve them. But again, you know, that's a slogan. It's very nice. It's okay for a podcast, but in order to delve deeply into it, well, that's a lot more work, and that's why I put it in several hundred pages of my two books, Thou Shall Prosper and Business Secrets from the Bible. But we started off this whole discussion saying that a culture that values certain things has many words for those things, because when you value something, you understand the nuances. I spoke about modern America's involvement with food. There are so many different words for different food things today. I don't know them, right? Because when it comes to food, I'm a very simple sort of person. I really am, you know. Give me a wonderful Texas steak and a plate of fries, and I'm good. I'm happy. It really, you know, when it comes with French names, and I just don't need that. It's, you know, we all have our own needs, right? There's nothing wrong with that. Right, in the same way that, you know, talk to me about boats, and I will tell you, I will spend as much time as you want discussing the differences between a cutter and a sloop, or a ketch and a schooner. I will talk about the benefits of twin engines over single engines. I'm happy, because I know all the nuances, because it's important to me. And so it is that in Jewish culture, money is important. It is, in a wonderful way. And so, not surprisingly, many words for money. Again, this sort of loops us back to the beginning of the whole discussion. One of the words for money in Hebrew is damim, which means, interestingly enough, same as the word for blood. What do we learn from that? In other words, any time that the Lord's language uses one word for two concepts, you have to know that the ultimate reality is obtained by merging those two concepts in your mind. And so here's one word in Hebrew, which means both blood and money. Well, that's interesting because, first of all, they are both funny words. They're sort of singular plural words, aren't they? Where, in the sense that nobody could say, give me a blood. A doctor can't call out to a nurse and say, give me a blood. He has to either say some blood or a unit of blood. You also cannot say to your father, can I have a money? No, can I have a unit of money called a dollar, or can I have some money? But, you know, it's completely different. You know, you could say, can I have a bottle? Sure. But you cannot say, can I have a blood, right? Can I have a bicycle? Sure. But you can't say, can I have a money? Here's another similarity, and that is that both are stored in banks. Isn't that interesting? They both belong in banks. You have blood banks, and you have money banks. Here's another similarity, and that is that both circulate the nutrients. One for a great big giant organism called a society or a country or a nation. Money is what circulates it. And when money is evil, as in socialist cultures, guess what? The nutrients don't circulate. Do you think that Russia used to have famines because the weather was bad? Or because the soil was non-productive? No! Russia had famines because they didn't have money. Money and blood carry the nutrients around the body. And a similarity between them is that both are best when you don't see them. Right? When you see blood, it's usually a bad sign. And when you see money, it's also not a good sign, because money is spiritual. It's just fine if you can't see it. If it's ones and zeros on the hard drive in your bank's computer, that's fine. If it's the orientation of iron oxide molecules in the brown strip on the back of your credit card, that's fine. And if you want to assign value to strips of colored paper or discs of metal, okay, fine. But in none of those cases are you actually seeing money. And if you do, and that's a different discussion, that's about as bad as it is when you see blood, because it's hemorrhaging. And that you've got to do something about it, otherwise the person bleeds out. Okay, now, what I want to do is take you all the way back to the first few chapters of Genesis, if you don't mind. And again, those of you who believe the Bible to be what I know it to be, That's fine. There are many of you who are less comfortable with the Bible, and that's also fine. But even you would admit that it's hard to find a book that has had more a monumental impact on Western civilization. So just in the interest of being knowledgeable and educated, take a look at the first couple of chapters of Genesis. Now, here's the interesting thing. In the English language, in primitive decoding, we use frequency tables, right? And this is not enigma level type stuff. We're talking very basic, where if you see symbols representing letters, you look for the symbol that appears most frequently, and in all probability, it is the letter E. And then you've got letters like S and T, which come, you know, fairly soon after that. Many languages do have fairly reliable frequency tables. Hebrew's not quite like that. For the most part, although you know you do have a letter hey or a letter aleph, which do appear fairly often, for the most part, you would expect all the letters of the alphabet to show up after we've gone through about the first 14 verses of Exodus. And sure enough, did I say Exodus? Forgive me, Genesis. And sure enough, by the time we've gone through, halfway through the first chapter of Genesis, we've got all the letters of the Hebrew alphabet have occurred at least once, with the exception of one letter. And that is the letter Samach. It is the letter that comes, in other words, as Hebrew gave life to Greek, and Greek gave life to English eventually, we have the letters J, K, L, M, N, O. And in Hebrew, you've got Yud, like the man who got swallowed by a whale was Yonah. Well, of course, we call him Jonah. So you've got the Yud, the J. We've got the Chaf is the K. We've got the L, the Lamed. We've got the Mem is the next letter. We've got the Nun, J, K, L, M, N, shows up in English as it does in Greek, as it does in the Hebrew origin. And then the next letter is the letter O, which is a round letter O. In Hebrew, you've also got a round letter, but it's pronounced S. And again, reasons for that out of the scope of this discussion. Some of that is in another book of mine, which you'll find on rabbidaniellappin.com. But for now, let us just focus, if we can, on the fact that all the letters show up halfway through the first chapter of Genesis, except that letter. How about we go all the way through the next half of the first chapter? It still hasn't shown up. Now it's really bizarre, because most letters now have shown up numerous times. And then we've got to go halfway through chapter 2, and that's the first time we ever find the letter Samach. And that is in chapter 2, verse 13, and it reads, "The name of the second river is Gihon." And that encircles the land of Cush. And here's the funny thing. That word encircle is the very first time the letter Samach shows up in Scripture. Now, I told you before that the letter Samach is the O, right? It's round, it's a circle. And what word does it show up in for the first time? Encircle. Not a coincidence, and I am sure you knew that was coming. Of course it's not a coincidence, because that's the meaning. Every time that word enjoys a significant role in any, that letter enjoys a significant role in any word, it always has to do with encircling. So you won't be surprised to discover that another word for money, I told you there are lots of words for money in Hebrew, another word for money is kesef. And you can hear the S sound in the middle of those three letters. Think of it in English as KSF, if you like. The middle letter is the Samach, and it's the letter which means the concept of encircling. All right, what's the idea there? Well, you got it right. That and the meaning of money is something which has to encircle. It has to keep on circling, rotating, circulating, is how we speak of it. In fact, you'll get a report from the Federal Reserve, which speaks about money in circulation. And one of the ways to damage an economy is pull money out of circulation. Because if money isn't circulating, it's not doing any good, which is why governments usually tax any transfer of money. Because they realize that that is the lifeblood of the economy. It's got to keep money moving. That's what money does. And so the best time to tax it is every time it moves from one person to another. And away we go. And so that's exactly what they do. How about the other two letters of that word for money, kesef? Well, those other two letters spell out the word, which in Hebrew means either the sole of the foot or the palm of the hand. What does the sole of the foot or the palm of the hand got to do with money? Again, answer. And I told the story just recently on a very good friend of mine asked me to be a guest on a podcast that he does. And I'll actually probably put a post, a reference when that podcast is posted. I'll put a reference on my Twitter feed at Daniel Lappin. And I'll do that because I think it was quite an interesting thing. And I made a point there, which I'll share with you now. I told a story that I was once, as a young boy, standing on the banks of the River Rhine with my father. And he said to me at a certain point, he said, "Daniel, what do you notice about the scene in front of us?" Well, I didn't know, did he mean the mountains in the background? Well, pretty soon I understood he was pointing at the River Rhine. And he was talking with an urgency. "Come on, what do you see? What is important? Tell me what you see that puzzles you." So I knew that it must be something that is not going to be there for long. Like, was it one of the seagulls that I saw, or was it a bird that was going to fly away, or what was it? And I'm really, because I want to please him, I want to come up with this thing. And he's going, "Come on, what is it? What are you seeing? You need to ask me a question now." And then all of a sudden, I saw it right before my startled eyes. Was an enormous Rhine River barge laden with coal, traveling towards my right, upstream, and right passing it, right there in front of me, was another barge, every bit as big, loaded to the gunwales with coal, moving to the left, towards Rotterdam and the mouth of the river. And I burst out laughing with just sheer exhilaration. I said, "I get it, I get it. I know what the question is, and I really want to know the answer," which is, surely, instead of a barge going from there to here and another barge of coal, why don't they just keep their coals where they were in the first place? This is weird that they're going in opposite directions. And of course it's weird. And therein, and my father gave me a whole lesson there. We sat down on a bench overlooking the river, and for an hour he explained the idea that, number one, that knowledge is money, right? In other words, if you know the value of something, or you know where something can be obtained, and you bring it, and then he came to this point, which is that the Hebrew word for money involves the sole of the foot and the palm of the hand. Why? Well, let's start with the palm of the hand. What is the palm of the hand for? In what way is it different from the back of your hand? Well, what does the phrase mean? "I'll give him the back of my hand." Have you ever heard that? It's in English, more English than American, I think. But "give him the back of my" means I'll punch him or I'll hit him. Right? That's all the back of the hand is good for. Think about it. I mean, what else can you do with the back of your hand? How about the front of your hand? You create. That's why our fingers fold inwards to the palm, right? They don't fold both ways because there's no point. They're not needed on the back. They need it on the front. The role of hair, of course, is one of physical more than spiritual. And so hair grows on the back of the hand that you use for punching. A hair on the palm of your hand would be a sign of that you're watching a horror movie because it's so wrong. It so doesn't belong. Right, because there's the understanding that the palm of the hand is the creative place. That's where you manipulate with your fingers and you can build things. You hold things in one palm. Watchmakers, watch a watchmaker at work. That's what he's doing. And so the palm of the hand is a place where we are creating. How about the sole of the foot? It's where we're transporting. And there are two ways here to increase value. Work on it or move it, right? You take an iceberg from the North Atlantic. where it's absolutely no more than a hazard to shipping, and you attach a tug to it, and you tow that giant iceberg all the way to Dubai in the Persian Gulf, and they tow it into a big dry dock area, and then they shut the gate, pump out the water, and they let the iceberg start melting. And then when it's finished, they've got millions and millions of gallons of fresh water. Yeah, that's right. Icebergs are actually fresh water. And so that iceberg has become enormously valuable just by moving it. That is one of the great secrets that are revealed by the Hebrew word for money, kesef. That's right. Palm of the hand, sole of the foot. It's possible to change the value of something by moving it or by working on it. That's exactly right. And that is just a little bit of ancient Jewish wisdom's culture of money, which I really do believe each and every one of us needs to benefit from. And you know what? If everybody around you does it, your life is better off, right? Because I don't care what you do to serve other people, but you're better off being in an affluent neighborhood than in a poverty-stricken neighborhood, because in a poverty-stricken neighborhood, nobody can afford your services. And it becomes a vicious cycle from which there is little escape. And so the more people that can adopt Jewish culture, the more people that can absorb the secrets of creating revenue from ancient Jewish wisdom, the happier I am, and the happier you should be too. So go over to the website, rabbidaniellappin.com. I don't know for how long this is going to be up. This is primarily for people who are listening, who do listen to the podcast on time when it's released. You can easily see the date. If you're more than a few days past the date of the release of this show, that what I'm about to tell you, the coupon code for a massive discount will not work. I apologize for that, but you understand how these things work. The podcast is up, and people listen to these shows sometimes a year or a year and a half after I record them, and obviously the actual financial incentives simply aren't there anymore. But for those of you listening at the time the podcast is being released, which is, as a matter of fact, on New Year's Day, 2017, the 1st of January 2017, I think is, no, it's not, it's being released on the last day of 2016. If you are listening within the next few days, use the promo code, go to my website, rabbidaniellappin.com. You'll see a special on my two books, Thou Shalt Prosper, The Ten Commandments for Making Money, and Business Secrets from the Bible. What you do is use the promo code New Year, N-E-W-Y-E-A-R, and you will get a price reduction that will bring the price of each of those books down to about, yeah, $13, right? Ridiculous. But it's a no-brainer, frankly, in terms of what you could do in your life using the information and the very practical tips and tools and techniques outlined in considerable detail in a very practical kind of way in both of those books. Well, that brings us to as far as we can go in today's show, which means that it's another week until we're together. Spread the word, encourage others to hear the podcast, have a wonderful week, and accept, would you, my blessing for a coming week of good health and, yes, prosperity. God bless.
This is Rabbi Daniel Lappin on demand on the Blaze Radio Network.